I'm Abigail Galvan. Welcome to EWTN Pro-Life Weekly.
I had an abortion, and I always say when I came out of there, when we came out of there, we were different.
One couple shares their story of abortion.
You're looking backwards and saying, oh my gosh, what have I done?
Their journey from regret, pain, and anger.
I think we didn't realize till later what those wounds really were.
To embracing their faith.
We let God into our life and into our relationship.
Finding forgiveness.
I think that what made it easier was when we went to confession.
And ultimately, joy in their life.
We're still together and happy, and we have all these wonderful kids. All we knew is that when we went in there, we were pregnant. When we came out, we weren't. We were broken. And our relationship just really got worse.
The heartbreak of abortion. A Catholic couple, Pete and Tricia DeMaio, are sharing their story of losing not one, but two children to abortion. It's a story of deep sorrow and a long road to forgiveness that included not just forgiving each other, but seeking that forgiveness from their family, including their children. As the DeMaios began to heal, they submitted their lives to the will of God and now promote a culture of life. The DeMaios run a Catholic pro-life nonprofit called Mission Love and Life. The organization seeks to educate people about the inherent value of life. They were inspired by the legacies of John Cardinal O'Connor, who founded the Sisters of Life, St. John Paul II, and Mother Teresa, to uphold and teach about the dignity of every person. They've spoken at Life Fest and speak at schools, sharing their story to warn listeners about the deep wounds abortion causes. Part of Mission Love and Life guides students as missionary disciples to grow closer to Jesus and be leaders in the pro-life movement. Pete and Tricia came to our Washington, D.C. studios to share their story of healing with me. Take a look. Pete and Tricia, thank you both so much for joining us today. Now, I know that the pro-life cause is a mission that's very near and dear to your hearts. Why is that?
First and foremost, we have a story that we did not have anyone speaking to us when we were younger to tell us why being pro-life is so important. We grew up Catholic, but we always say we were lowercase C Catholic. So we didn't have that instilled in us, how precious life is and how it, from the moment of conception, it is truly a life that God gave. And we made some decisions early on in our relationship. We've been dating since high school. And we feel like if we had had that information, that's what we were lacking, was the education. So because of our personal story, it's very, very near and dear to our heart. But also we want to get the education out to kids who maybe don't understand why life is so precious and why being pro-life is so important, especially as Catholics.
Yeah, God's taken the decisions that we've made early on in our relationship. We always describe the first 10 years as being really a mess, and then the last 20 years we've allowed God to be at the center of our marriage. But that's what was lacking. When we go back and take a look at it, we say that was the missing piece. Is yes, we were Catholic. Yes, we were raised with a lot of this. We have wonderful parents and good families. So we weren't lacking in that. We were lacking in a true, authentic relationship with God. So what He's done for us now has taken us as broken human beings, you know, individually and together, and just wove this beautiful story of His love, His forgiveness, His mercy, His healing, and His grace. So we want to help others on the front end to understand, like Tricia said, and have this education. But on the back end, we want to help people who may have wounds that they can also come to know God's love and His healing and His forgiveness.
And for our viewers and listeners who might not be familiar with your story, would you mind recapping it for us?
Sure. So Pete and I met in high school. We were 15. And pretty much from the beginning, we were, you know, we fell in love. I mean, it was a true, like, high school sweetheart story. But we were living in the world, and everybody was doing it, you know, kind of thing. And we became sexually active. And when I was 17, I got pregnant. And there's a lot to the story, but to, you know, we were living a life that was unhealthy for as far as dating goes, which is why we are so passionate about teaching kids how to have healthy relationships and healthy dating. But anyway, I got pregnant. We ended up going, no one knew. We didn't tell anyone I had an abortion. And I always say when we came out of there, we were different. We knew that our problem was solved, but we were broken. Mm-hmm. And our relationship just really got worse.
Did you feel like you had an understanding of what an abortion was when you were going in?
No, all we knew is that when we went in there, we were pregnant. When we came out, we weren't, and we didn't understand any of it. And that's why I say, you know, we truly didn't understand, I don't think. I mean, we had a value for our life, and we knew, like, how that God made us and all that mm-hmm. stuff that you're taught in school, in Catholic school. We went to Catholic school, but there was something missing, like the true gift of your soul that mm-hmm. God gives you. We didn't have that. I don't think.
This is the 90s, so for us to have that information about any of the medicine or science mm-hmm. behind this, fetal development, we would have to go to the library. Mm-hmm. This isn't like pull your phone out and quick search it up. This is those days. So yes. We weren't going to a library to pull out charts on fetal development, and that's why Tricia says not only were we lacking, you know, the theological foundation in our lives and in mm-hmm. our relationships, but we were also lacking just basic scientific and medical education mm-hmm. too. That's why these, you know, everything like a program like this is so wonderful, just to bring the, you know, the formation and the education out.
Yeah, for sure.
Now you mentioned that you walked in and you walked out and you felt broken and you felt the severity of something being wrong. Can you just speak more about like the wounds and what that time was like?
I think we didn't realize till later what those wounds really were, but I can't explain it unless you there's just this emptiness. It's like we did something, because it's not a little, they make it seem like it's just this, little procedure. I mean, now in today's world, you can take a pill at home and everything's yes. fixed, right? So it's like taking Tylenol, it's no big deal, but it really, it's a big deal. And when we came out of there, we were young, we were scared. No one gives you any, you know, this is what we're going to do. This is how you're going to. Mm-hmm. So you walk out of there and you just feel empty. And then as years went on and, you know, we're in this relationship and we're arguing, we're fighting, we're in college, we're partying, you realize that, like, oh my gosh, we were lacking something, and we were looking for healing in all these other places, and we couldn't until we talked about it, because the first one no one knew about until recently, like parents, siblings, all. The second one my parents knew about, but his didn't. So there's all that. You have to, like, you're living this lie, basically, because mm-hmm. there is this shame that's attached to it, which I try and tell people when we speak, it's not, you made a mistake. There's mistakes that happen all the time, we do, right? You have to forgive. So until we went to confession and really, like, laid it out there, opened up to each other, to our families, to God, that's when it was like this healing began. But we talk about how all different generations are affected by it, our kids, our parents. There's just so much going on inside that you can't, it's not a joyful thing. So, you know, when you experience joy, it's, you're, you live it out, right? Everybody around you gets to feel it with you. This was something that was tucked inside, and you really, to heal the wound, it has to be spoken about, I think, and that's kind of...
Because at the end of the day, even though we lack the information, I think you still know this is a baby. So while we might not know everything about the development charts, we knew, okay, you get pregnant and a baby is born 9 months later. And so, yeah, there's something. And I think what really, for me, you know, from a man's perspective, what really brought it all to light to me and talk about just opening the wound up is when we get married and then you're pregnant for the first time and there's all this excitement and joy and the books, the what to expect when expecting, and Trisha's telling me, okay, the baby's the size of a blueberry, now the size of a strawberry, now the baby has, you know, all everything that you just celebrate, all these little like markers and milestones. Oh my gosh, honey, I just drank juice and I felt the baby flip, you know, and all these things, and you're just this healthy excitement and anticipation, and then the baby's born, and then you realize that you're looking backwards and saying, oh my gosh, what have I done? Mm-hmm. And when I talk to young men, I always share that with them. There is nothing that's more unnatural for a man. Like, nothing could be more, go against our natural manhood and masculinity than to pay someone else $400 or $500 to dismember your own child. I mean, that's just something that, talk about a wound that I had to carry. And then for us to have to talk through that with each other. We're just so thankful. We thought there were others like us that were post-abortive and then wound up with this beautiful story that God gave them a timeout and a start over and rewrote their love story for them. And then here we come to find out we're pretty unique. There aren't that many people who went through this, God healed them, and then they wind up married and have 7 beautiful children. So now it's come to be, you know, to be something that others want to know about and hear.
That's amazing. So what do you think made that difference for you all?
I think it was your brother. That really was it took a tragedy to wake us up.
Yeah, because we were living, and I think it's not uncommon for many people, even Catholics, we were living according to the world. You know, you go to high school, then you start work planning on where am I going to go to college? What's my major going to be? What kind of job am I going to get? You know, and at the end of the day, that's not what matters most to God. And so it really was the diagnosis of my mom and my brother both had cancer back in 2001 and 2002, and that really just shook us up as a family, but it wasn't enough. It was losing my brother to cancer that just completely just emptied me out and bottomed me out. And no coincidence with God, they then become my favorite Bible verses, like Galatians 2:20, it's no longer I who live, but Christ who lives in me or dwells in me. And it's, well, yeah, of course, I had to empty out first before God could fully dwell in me. But his death led to that. And so I had nowhere else to turn. I couldn't find any solutions in the world. Matthew Kelly from Dynamic Catholic says we all have a God-sized hole inside of us, and we try and fill it up with all these other things like money, vacation, promotion, travel, whatever, you know. Yeah. And none of that fills our God-sized hole. And so the only thing that's going to fill it is God. When God started to fill that hole for us, and I went on retreat to Malvern Retreat House, I had confession with Father James McCurry. It was not just a confession, it was a full reconciliation. I came home to Trisha. I was all filled up with the Holy Spirit. I was blabbing to her. I asked her if she would go and have a reconciliation, and she did. And that was that literally was the beginning of our new relationship. I mean, Trisha was actually still contracepting. We were married, and she was still on the contraceptive pill, and we didn't even know. Number one, I didn't know as her husband why it wasn't healthy for her as a female, and we didn't know morally why this was an evil. She had been on the pill before I ever met her. She was a young girl, you know, who had a problem with her cycle, and the doctor just... Mm-hmm. And so here I'm learning this, and now this love and appreciation that I'm having for the female, you know, the woman that God created for me, and I'm loving her, and I'm saying, honey, you can't take that anymore. This isn't healthy for you. Plus, morally, it's wrong. Next thing we know, a month later, she's pregnant. Wow. And then that summer, August 12th, our oldest son is born, and he's born on my brother Mike's birthday, the one who had just passed away from cancer.
Wow.
Yeah. So he'll be 20 next week, and I think, you know, you ask what kept us with all this that had gone on. We have no reason to be together, really, mm-hmm. if you look at the statistics. We filled every single one that would, you know.
Yes.
But I think things like that, we let God into our life and into our relationship, and he just kept showing us all these different signs like, hey, I'm here, I know you, I see you, I forgive you. So I think that's a huge reason why we're still together and happy, yeah. and we have all these wonderful kids. And
you know, I think one thing that I love about your story is that I think it's the story of many people out there. One of the reasons I'm passionate about the pro-life movement is because when I was younger, I was taught, like, in school, you get pregnant, you have an abortion. I wasn't sexually active at the time, but I didn't really stop to question these things. Mm-hmm. It wasn't until I was in college and older that I started to learn about the church's teachings, and then that you start to see God's wisdom and why he teaches what he teaches us. Mm-hmm. So I love that people out there that are, like, they've just been, like, as you said, living according to the world, that there is a way out. And when you were talking about your story, you mentioned feeling shame, isolation. Yeah. These are all the effects of sin, which is, at its core, a rupture in your relationship with Christ. Mm-hmm. And so, like, to know that they just even the sacraments, that's why we have them, right? Because God is always trying to draw us closer to him and draw mm-hmm. us closer to him. I wanted to ask you, when you were at that age, what message would you have for a young woman or a young man who's, like, exactly in your shoes? Maybe they've been growing up according to the world. They find themselves in this situation. What advice would you give them?
I think from the man's perspective, it's okay. I wind up giving a lot of talks over the last, like, 10 or 15 years, especially in our high schools, and I just made myself available, so it just happened. And I think for the guys is learning that we're supposed to love authentically, and that I always ask, what's the opposite of love? And sometimes they'll say hate, but usually there'll be a few that hit it, and they say the opposite of love is use or lust or indifference. And I say, exactly. St. Maximilian Kolbe says the greatest evil of our time is indifference. So as young men or men, grown men, we're not allowed to be indifferent towards others, especially not the ladies in the world. We're not allowed to be. God called us for something greater, right? And it's to seek virtue and not, you know, not vice. So take those glasses that the world hands us and theology of the body teaching, you know, take those glasses off and let's see through the lenses that God actually gave us and restore those lenses again. And then I think for the ladies, something I always mention to them, like if they're separate and I can just give separate advice, is I say, ladies, you have the key. If the guys are lusting after you instead of a self-sacrificial love, wanting to become a gift of self, if they're just lusting after you, and they're seeking something like a worldly pleasure from you, the only way you're going to know is if you put them in check and tell them no. So I said, if Trisha put me in check back then when we were 15, one of two things is going to happen. I'm either going to walk away, and if I do, then she knows I'm not the right one for her. But if I don't walk away, that's how she can find out if I truly want to love her and cherish her and date for marriage and spend the rest of my life. So. And there's, I feel like, that complementarity between the two sexes. We're not supposed to be divided. We're supposed to build each other up.
I think, you know, the only thing I would add, because I obviously that's what we try and teach. But, you know, like even with our own children, because they're older now and they're dating, and it's so important to have that respect for, and the whole, like, theology of the body is huge. We didn't know that as kids. I mean, to have that respect for the other sex and to know that there's so much more, just getting to know each other, and don't put all that pressure on yourself to live in the world. We didn't have that. And it's important to have that mutual respect and to girls definitely hold the key, you know, and if you say no, he's more than likely he's gonna respect you if he's the right one, right?
Mm-hmm.
So yeah.
And you're right, honey, and teaching our own children mm-hmm. is it adds a layer into the relationship that doesn't need to be there, and you don't get a chance to find out if you're truly compatible before. So that sexual intimacy, which is why God created this, as you said, if we just follow God's plan for happiness for our lives, and it's I love something that JP 2 said. He said, and I know we have a huge pornography crisis in the world today, and he said, you know, the problem with that is that it reveals too little about the other person, not too much about the other person. Wow. And I love that, because dating truly is about finding out if you really like the other person and enjoy, you know, them and spending time with them, and that would be the beginning and the foundation of possibly getting married.
Yeah.
Now, I have another question for you. I imagine you had to do a lot of with forgiveness, whether it was forgiving others, maybe more difficultly forgiving yourselves and forgiving each other. What has this process been like for you all?
Forgiving is hard. I think that what made it easier was when we went to confession. And to know that God, he forgives everything. So if he can forgive, and the Bible tells us we're going to be judged based on how we forgive, right? You have to forgive. I mean, I kind of felt at first there was some anger when we started dealing with all this, because I was like, you know, I went to my boyfriend the first time with this problem, and I thought he was going to lead me in the right direction. My parents the second time, these are people that love me, and little did I know, they were just as scared as I was, you know what I mean? They didn't have the education, they didn't know what they were doing. So you have to deal with so much, and there's some days where I'm like, when we told our children, it was really hard, especially our daughter, who, like, I'm her mom. Is she ever gonna, we have to deal with her forgiving, and I can tell you I don't know that you ever stop forgiving. It's kind of like an ongoing, there's days where I'm like, gosh, I can't believe we did that. And you're like really hard on yourself. Mm-hmm. And then there's other days where you're like, well, God forgave me, so look at this beautiful life that we have. And so it's definitely I don't know that the forgiving ever just stops. If that makes sense.
No, it's almost like forgiveness is almost a choice, like everything else. But I agree. I think our sacraments, as you said before, are so beautiful and so important that when you truly feel the forgiveness from God, it does make you want to extend that to others. And as you said, Tricia, we are going to be judged, you know, on that. Luke 6 is one of my favorites. So Luke 6:37 specifically. So I think that was helpful. And, you know, then God reveals things to us when the scales, thank you, are removed from our eyes. He'll reveal the truth and the goodness. I mean, here I am back then, so resentful and so angry for the second abortion because I didn't get any say in that one. Well, I'm the one who caused that problem. If I didn't get Tricia pregnant outside of marriage, she and her parents would have never had to even have that conversation or discussion to begin with. So who am I to condemn or to judge them when I'm the one who I was the author of the problem, not the victim of the problem, and I was playing victim. And so I think that then that forgiveness just becomes universal, and it's okay, God forgives me, I forgive myself, I forgive others, and you see this beauty, and if it's okay all the way up to having to tell our children, and oh my goodness, the Sisters of Life asked us to come and speak for Life Fest 2 years ago and share our story. Our daughter Alyssa, who we had just told, said, I think you should tell the little ones. So
we were dreading telling our kids.
Okay.
And we, but because Pete was speaking in schools at the time, they were getting older, and he was going to start talking to, like, their friends, and we didn't want them to find out from someone else. So we had told our oldest, then we told our second one the next, and then we told Alyssa, and then that's when we went down, we were coming down here to speak at Life Fest before the March for Life. And she was seeing how they all, I mean, when you have more than one child, you see all these different personalities, and they all took it differently. But she was like, she was angry, and she had a lot in there. And part of it was is that her older brothers knew and she didn't know. And even though it was only for like a little bit of time, it was kind of like, so she said, you have to tell all of them. And we were on our way down to Life Fest. It was late at night. We had crazy stuff, busy life, and got all these things going on. And we're on our way down. We had to be up like super early the next morning to be there. And he shuts the radio off in the car, and he's like, everybody put your phones down. And we told him. It was like, and if you can picture all nine of us in this big sprinter van, right? And it was like crazy. It was like World War III in the car. They're crying and yelling and don't tell me how to feel and all this. And Alyssa's like, you know what? Everybody just be quiet. She said, Mom, you're always talking to us about forgiveness and healing. And she said, I've been praying to the babies. And I Googled the patron saint of forgiveness, and it's Saint Maria Goretti. And I hope you don't mind, but the first baby was a girl, and I named her Maria Goretti. And the patron saint of healing is Saint Raphael. And the second baby was a boy, and I named him Raphael. And this peace just came over our car, and we looked at each other, and we were like, oh my gosh, God never stops giving for his forgiveness and his healing, because now we had these two babies in heaven that all our kids know about, and we can pray to them and we can love them, and they're kind of like watching over us, right? And it was beautiful. It really was.
So Pete and Trisha, just thank you so much for being here with us and sharing your story.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for having us. Yeah, God bless. Yeah.
Pete and Trisha's nonprofit aims at teaching the dignity of life to others. To learn more about their organization, visit missionloveandlife.org. That does it for this edition of EWTN Pro-Life Weekly. Be sure to like and follow us on our social media channels. You can find us at EWTN Pro-Life on X, Facebook, and Instagram. And sign up for our newsletter, The Pro-Life Pulse, EWTN.com/pro-life. Remember, life is a gift. Your life is a gift. God bless.